Barry Cooper, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Yeah, morning.
Now, we're here, of course, to talk about Alan Turing. It's his year. He is the father of the computer, without a doubt.
That's right.
Everything that we have around us, this entire studio, works on computers. My phone, which I've just been showing you, this Galaxy Note thing, which is just sensational. Yes. But he started it all off, didn't he? Just give us a brief story as to how it happened.
Well, I guess the computer goes back to around 1936 when Alan Turing was a mathematician, of course, a rather geekish mathematician. He works at Cambridge at that time. And he worked on a rather kind of a mathematical problem that not many people would understand at that time. But out of that that rather kind of strange piece of mathematics, out of that came the computer that changed the world after him. So there was a kind of theoretical invention of the computer, which later on became taken up by people all around the world and gave rise to all the kind of computing equipment that we now see and that runs our life, basically.
Well, of course, nowadays we have integrated circuits and all sorts of minuscule things that make these things happen. But in those days, what would it have been? Valves and resistors and capacitors?
Yeah, I mean, all the engineering aspect had to be invented at that time. The Turing brainwave was the stored program, the way in which one could use the same machine for doing lots of different jobs by using programming and treating the programmer's data, which you put into the computer, in the same way as you put in other data. That idea really took over, but it needed the engineering as well to make a reality of the computer.
So in essence, what we're saying here, Barry, is that prior to him coming along, there were computers built for specific things, and his idea was
to use this machine basically what would be called calculating machines. And so every time you wanted a particular job done, you built a new machine. That could be a very long process, whereas nowadays we have one machine and we put in chunks of program which do all sorts of different jobs, and we store the program so we can bring it out at a moment's notice and do all sorts of fantastic things in the blink of an eye.
And of course, nowadays we have lots of programs all running together.
Programs can run simultaneously. No longer do we have to build our machine each time we want to do a particular job.
What was Alan Turing like as a man? As a human being?
Well, he was a mathematician, and mathematicians...
Didn't get much social life, then, is that what you're saying?
Oh, well, he did. He got into trouble with his social life, actually.
Yes, he did, and he got an apology, didn't he?
Yes, because, I mean, he was gay at a time when this wasn't acceptable, and in fact it was against the law. And nowadays, of course, we're more enlightened, and we allow people to be individuals. But, he did have his social life, but he was a very geekish sort of mathematician, and mathematicians tend to be very geekish and do fantastic things that people find difficult to get their heads around.
But, well, I have to admit that maths is not my top subject. But coming back to Alan Turing, he basically worked on this automatic computing engine. Can you tell us a bit about that?
That was after the war. Ooh. Of course, I mean, if you go back before the war, he was a kind of straight mathematician who worked with theory. And then during the war, he was kind of dragged into the real world, which was the real world of decoding messages from the German high command and so on, trying to predict where the German submarines were going to be and protecting our ships that were going
backwards
and forward. He was one of the leading people in decoding Enigma encrypted messages. The general agreement is that shortened the war by maybe 2 years. And now, during that period when he was working at Bletchley Park, they had to construct machines to help with the decrypting. It was after the war that he got involved with actually building the first computers. The ACE, the automatic computing engine, that was one of the first computers. And I guess around 1948 was the first proper stored program computer. It hardly did anything. It was like a toy almost, you know. But it did have the principles that gave rise to today's computers.
Well, if I remember correctly, they auctioned off an Enigma machine recently, didn't they? It's a fantastic amount of money.
There are a lot of Enigma machines around still, because they were used all over the world for encrypting and, you know, so that people could talk without people knowing what was being said. But they do fetch quite a lot of money now, they are auctioned.
So we got in, as far as Alan's life is concerned, we've got as far as 1947. We're talking about this ACE, automatic computing engine. Where did he go from there? What was the next step for him?
Well, of course, as does happen, people of ideas often run into frustrations. People don't understand what they're doing and they don't fund it properly and so on. He got rather frustrated and he left the project of the ACE to other people to finish, which was done. He went back to Cambridge for a year and then he went on to Manchester. He had a great supporter there, which was Professor Max Newman, one of the people that supported him all through his life. He entered a new phase and he did things to do with artificial intelligence, bioinformatics. He predicted mathematically how, say, stripes on zebras arose and patterns on, cows' backs and this sort of thing. You would never dream there was mathematics behind that, but he dug the mathematics out did this in Manchester, and that was kind of a new phase of his life. The artificial intelligence was very important at that period, and that's an enduring influence on what's happening now. Artificial intelligence is going to be very important in the coming years, and there's Alan Turing still there with an influence on what's happening.
I remember some years back when people started using this phrase, this buzz phrase, fuzzy logic.
Oh, right, right.
Trying to integrate electronics with our way of life, I believe, was the idea, wasn't it?
I mean, there's a lot of life which isn't cut and dried. You know, we live in a digital world, but not everything can be exactly pinned down. And so there's a lot of mathematics, fuzzy mathematics, if you like, and statistical ways of working, which Alan Turing was actually very involved with. He used what we call Bayesian approximations at Bletchley Park, and that was one of his innovations at that time.
Now, for yourself, you're actually Professor of Mathematical Logic at Leeds University.
Yes,
sounds like something totally surreal for me, but I mean, what do you actually do then? What does a mathematician actually do?
This is what my father asked. He once saw me with a book open and he said, "What's this useful for, Barry?"
Hold the door open.
Mathematical logic, it kind of underlies a lot of the way we think and work. If you look at the world, you can look at it as information, and logic kind of governs the way information, the structure of information, the way it works. And of course, you're not really aware of this in everyday life, but the logician digs into this kind of, detailed workings, and that's what Alan Turing started off with, I guess. But he diversified a lot. He did get involved with the real world a great deal, and he was interested in the engineering and the physical aspects of the world, as well as the kind of underlying logic, which is hard for people to get their heads around.
But it does give an insight, I mean, I think. Now, let's just move on to Cambridge, Wong, because first of all, let me ask you, Barry, this is a worldwide event, Alan Turing Year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's very moving, actually, that it has been taken up so internationally. I mean, Hong Kong, of course, Brazil, China, all over the world, Canada, America, Europe. There's predictable places and less predictable places. I'm going to be going to Mexico in November, for instance. Now, that was a surprise.
Sure. Cambridge, what are we expecting here in Hong Kong?
There are quite a number of activities going on in May and June until the end of this year. For the Hong Kong Computer Society, we invite Professor Cooper coming to Hong Kong and give two talks. One is a public talk going to happen tonight at the Hong Kong Productivity Centers at Carlton, starting from 7 tonight. So it's open to public. And we have a group of Turing's fans getting together and organizing a lot of interesting things, not just academic things, just interested to the IT people, but we actually have a group of artists and writers who are inspired by Alan's work, and they are coming up with a lot of different artwork as well. So we are going to have a mini exhibition in June from 13th to 30th that will be held in the Hong Kong Art Centers.
Wow.
You will see a lot of local artists showing their artworks. We have all paintings, we have choreography, Chinese choreography, we have t-shirt design, a lot of things, as well as we also have some manuscript photos courtesy of King's College, Cambridge University. So we're also going to show this to the general public. And besides that, we're also going to have a centenarial parties on the 100th birthday of
that's what it's about, isn't it?
June
100 years.
to commemorate Alan Turing's, as well as some public talk by me that will be drilled into more details about Alan Turing's work during the World War II, as well as artificial intelligence.
There's even a song performance as well.
Yes, song performance. A local artist actually wrote a song called Alan Turing Songs that can be found in YouTube.
Okay. Now, there's a website that people can go to get more information on this, Cambridge?
Yes, for the worldwide website, they just go into Google and type Alan Turing Year, then they can find the website of Mr. Barbieri.
Top of the pile.
And in Hong Kong, if they want to find more about the local Alan Turing Year's activities, they can go into Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Alan Turing Year in Hong Kong.
Okay.
They just go in and type, and they can ask to become a member of that group.
It's on Twitter as well.
Yeah. Now, Barry, this talk tonight, this is open for everybody. So, approximately, yes. what will you be sort of covering?
Well, I'm going to try and deal with some of the ideas, but it'll be a mix of talking about Turing's life and who he was, and very personally interesting person. And also, the ideas that he invented and developed during his life. I'm going to try and make
this
it accessible.
This is more for the layman.
I'm going to make it accessible, yes,
sure.
Hopefully, yes.
And IT people listening, for the second talk of yours, that will be the Cyberport, is that correct, tomorrow?
Yes.
At the Cyberport.
Yes.
And again, if people want to get in touch for the second talk or even the first talk, is there a number that they can call back?
Yes, they can go to the website and go into Hong Kong Computer Society website. They have all the information are there. They can send email or there's a phone number there as well.
Okay. Well, listen, I'd just like to thank both of you for dropping by. It's a fascinating discussion. And Alan Turing, of course, was a fascinating person in himself.
Yes.
And all the best for the talk this evening. That's at the HKPC in Kowloon Tong. And the one for IT people is lunch tomorrow at the Cyberport. More details on the Hong Kong Computer Society's webpage.